Hello, welcome to the Sutliffian Report. Today we are going to cover some very interesting stuff on Sharia, and I'll tell you up front, I believe that Sharia is the death of Islam. After spending some intense time reading it, and I've got a long ways to go when I'm rereading this, and I think the little bit by little bit, if we take it little bit by little bit, it'll be quite a ways before we're through, but this will blow your mind. I've spent some time talking with Dr. Lloyd DeJong on this, and I have come in full agreement with him that Sharia is the death of Islam, and I'll be sharing why in a little while. But as this is a Christian news show, I always start with a reading from God's Word. And as I'm going through the book of Genesis, and if you're willing to join me in doing this every day, you can send me an email at BEREAN_research@yahoo.com, and you can join my join my devotional mailing list. That's all you got to do is just ask. I send one out once a day, generally in the morning. And let me just tell you, I had never read Genesis as a book of love until this year, and I wish I had noticed it earlier. I'm reading today from Genesis 8:14-22. And in the second month, on the 7th and 20th day of the month, was the earth dried. And God spoke to Noah, saying, "Go forth, you and your wife and your son's wife with you. Bring forth with you every living thing that is with you, of all flesh, both of fowl and of cattle and of every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. They that may breed abundantly in the earth and be fruitful and multiply upon the earth." And Noah went forth, and his sons and his wives and his sons' wives with him. Every beast, every creeping thing, every fowl and whatsoever creeps upon the earth and after their kinds, and went forth out of the ark. And Noah built an altar unto the Lord and took of every clean beast, of every clean fowl and and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor. And the Lord said in his heart, "I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest and cold and heat and summer and winter and the day and night shall not cease." Just as God remembered Noah and his family, Noah remembered God and made an offering to him. This act of thanksgiving and praise for having saved them got a response from God. It was not said out loud, but was communicated in his blessing. That message was, "I will not again curse the ground for man's sake." What does God think when we honor him? Verse 21 speaks of the pleasing smell of sacrifice and how it pleased God that Noah gave back to him. It wasn't required. This was not an admission of sin, but of thanksgiving and praise. God's response was a blessing, which relevant to us today. This is the first recorded praise offering. When you give a praise or thanksgiving offering, you expect nothing in return. It's the same as giving gifts. You shouldn't give them while expecting something in return. But something does happen. When you give a gift, when you praise God, you're placed on his mind. Think about that. When you give a gift to someone, are you on his mind? Wouldn't you want to be on God's mind? Dear Lord Jesus, thank you for bringing us through horrible things. You're there with us, walking beside us through all the horrible things that we go through, the joys, the sorrows, and even more. Lord, you are always there for us. You never leave us. Lord, thank you for being there. We might think you've abandoned us, Lord, but you never do. Lord, I thank you for doing all these wonderful things and staying by me through thick and thin. In Jesus' name, amen. So here we go. I am going to share my screen, and we are going to have some fun. I probably didn't share this every place I should have, but today I'll put it out later. So this is where we're going. And let's see if I can get the screen to move here. Okay. I want to talk about, I'm going to actually grow this so everybody can see this. This to me is a mind number. In the beginning of the Reliance of the Traveler, this, and I'm going to take off the logo so everybody can see this. And we'll take that off. All right. Hey, Larry, let me put in, if you want to join us, I'll put the link in. Sorry about that. I hadn't even thought of that. So in the beginning of the Reliance of the Traveler, which is what we're talking about when we talk about Sharia, this book is actually called Reliance of the Traveler and Tools of the Worshipper. There's a reason why it's called Tools of the Worshipper. Did you know that the only place that they are told how to pray and what to do, and I mean, I'm talking about when they, you know, it looks like they're banging their head on the ground, they're moving in a certain movement, they're, what they have to say, how they have to say it, is all said in Sharia. It's not in the Quran. It's not in the Hadith. It's not in the Siras. The only place that stuff exists is in Sharia. Here's a part I think that's really interesting in this beginning. Not a single omission has been left untranslated, unless interesting for some other reason. Hey, thank you for joining us, Larry. So I put this up because I'm going to find out that's not exactly true, and that this is not an exact translation, nor is it – I mean, this is where I think some of this is really, really interesting. What we're going to learn, at least what I'm learning about this book is, as we know pretty well, that those who translate things from Arabic into English usually practice some deception because they're afraid we might learn something. And I've been working with Usama and working on my next book, and it's going to be on this topic. So let's start paying attention. I know I started this as a whole show by itself. Thought I should put this into the, cover this topic fully on one of the listen reports, because this is, to me, this is just powerful stuff. I don't know how many people are willing to get into this. It does sound dry, but when you start to look at really what this is covering, this is the book that tells them how to pray. This is the book that tells them how to wash. It tells them everything. Again, it's not in Sharia. It's not in the Quran. All this information is not in the Quran. It tells them how to pray. It's not there anywhere. Well, what is in Sharia sometimes? When I say it's not in other places, it's rather revealing. And we're just going to get into that. And if you're surprised, I can tell you, I am so thoroughly surprised by some of the stuff I'm learning. So let me get my mouse back over here. Here we go. We'll head over. So the first thing I'm going to read to you is, again, we're starting out in the beginning. I hope to go all the way through this. This might take me a year. But I'll say this. I think this is the stuff we all need to know. All right. So from the beginning, this is A1.1, the knowledge of good and bad. Hey, Larry, you still here with us? All right. All right, I'll read it. There is no disagreement among the scholars of the Muslims that the source of legal rulings for all the acts of those who are morally responsible is Allah Most Glorious. Really, there's no disagreement among the scholars that the source of legal rulings for all the... Okay, let's see what the next one says. A1.2. The question arises, is it possible for the mind alone, aided by Allah's messengers and revealed scriptures, to know rulings, such that someone not reached by a prophet's invitation would be able through his own reason to know Allah's rule concerning his actions? Or is this impossible? Now, I want you to think about this. So here's what I have written, and feel free to contribute, Darcy and Larry and anybody else who has a thought on this. But in a nutshell, is it possible to know right from wrong apart from Allah's intervention? Now, think about that. Is it possible to know right from wrong? Are there things that you just know are wrong and things that you just know are right? Did God have to divinely intervene so you can know those things? And that's where I think it's going to get interesting. Start thinking about that. thank you, Larry. I caught your message. Okay. Since the Torah is affirmed as accurate in the Quran, the question should be addressed using Genesis 1:27. So let's take a look. What does Genesis 1:27 say? Let me pull that up real quick. And so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Whoa! Wait a minute. God created us. If God created us in his image, again, this is something the Quran says is accurate. Hey, Eric. Welcome. And I got to keep moving these buttons here, all right? If God created us in his image, and again, the Quran says the Torah is accurate. If he created us in his image, at bare minimum, there should exist a concept of good versus evil, because God is wholly good. Don't you think we should feel uncomfortable around that which is evil? Don't you think we should at least have that feeling of some? Now, does a child have these concepts? Can they be trained against these concepts? Those are other things to think about. I'm looking at this here. It says a prophet has to help. A messenger has to help. An angel has to help. So Allah can get his point across. What? Is it impossible for Allah to do this without that help? So let's think about this. Let me just read this. If that is not true, since the God of the Torah is wholly good, but if that's not true of Allah, we have a break between a God that is wholly good and a God that is not wholly good. If God is not wholly good, this at minimum places the concept of a God singular in existence on the scale of belief in multiple gods. So this is where as I spend more time looking at Sharia, and you spend more time looking at the Quran and the Hadith, you start to see in Allah all these concepts that you will find when you talk about many gods. He's a much smaller God, is what I'm going to get into. This God can't communicate without assistance. Allah can't communicate without a prophet. Allah can't communicate without messengers. That's what it says here. It is impossible for the mind alone, unaided by Allah. Thank you, Rad, for joining us. And start thinking about this. It's impossible for the mind alone, unaided by Allah's messengers to reveal and revealed scriptures, to know rulings. Here we go. So again, let me get back into this. I'm having a good laugh when I think about this. There are multiple reasons for this. One, Allah is not able to communicate with his creation. He is limited in power. Again, I didn't say this. It's right here in Sharia. It's right there, A1.2. It is possible for the mind alone, unaided by Allah's messenger and revealed scriptures, to know rulings such that someone not reached by a prophet's invitation. So he's limited. This is, again, it's in Sharia. I didn't put it there. Allah is not capable of hardwiring morality into mankind. Think about that. That's what this is, the second point. If Allah can't hardwire morality into mankind, what does that say? It would say, I mean, what the Christian will tell you and the Jewish person will tell you is that the God of the God of the Jewish, the Judeo-Christian concept of God will tell you man is hardwired with morality. He's given that, the concepts of right and wrong. What man does with that is his own choice. This is where I'm, you know, I start to think about that. It means it's, I mean, think about this. If Allah doesn't do this, it's possible he could never be recognized as God also. So think about that. Because if he doesn't hardwire people to know who he is, that's an interesting concept. What's point three here? Allah is establishing, yes, that is also, yeah, when we talk about the concepts of brainwashing, we don't talk about that. We don't use the term brainwashing anymore. I mean, I think we need to. It's a term that was used in the 60s and 70s to describe cults. And I think that today we need to talk about that more. This is, to me, mind-numbing for many reasons. What I'm taking from this, I mean, again, this is, I'm glad that you made that comment. Now I've got to go back and add that to what I've been working on. Thank you, Larry. this portrays Allah as too little to be God. All right, so here's my third point on this. Allah is establishing that there exists multiple concepts of morality. Now, this is actually important, and we're going to get into that. He's claiming only his concept is correct. Now, what does this exactly mean? If only his concept is correct, you can have a Nietzschean-type view of morality. If anyone is familiar with Nazis, their concept of reality comes from Nietzsche's Übermensch, where he is above the law, basically. Doesn't matter what the common person's morality is. It matters what the Superman, Übermensch means Superman, what the Superman's morality is, because the Superman is above everybody else's morality. So, again, this is something to think about. It's something to grasp. Take a look at this. I mean, this is the other part here. I'll probably need to do some more on that. But, again, this stuff, we're only on A1.2, and to me it's mind-numbing. And I've been going through this and thinking about it, and I think I've already hit these points I've got here. Let me just make sure. Ethics, yeah, okay. Okay, I'm going to go on. A1.3. Now, the positions of the Asharis, the followers of Abdul Hassan Ashari, is that the mind is unable to know the rule of Allah about the acts of those morally responsible except by means of his messengers and inspired books. Now, this is where Larry is saying, you have to throw everything out. I think that's where I'll put it right here. Let me just... I should have a pen on me. Here we go. I can't survive without a pen. I'm an educator. I can't live without a pen. And let me just add brainwashing. Credit to Larry. Thank you, Larry. think about this. If he's, again, the position of the Asharis, the followers of Abdul Hassan Ashari, is the mind, that the mind is unable to know the rule of Allah about the acts of those morally responsible except by means of his messenger and inspired books. For minds are in obvious disagreement about acts. Some minds find certain acts good. Others find them bad. Moreover, one person can be of two minds about one and the same thing. No. This is called the law of non-contradiction. You can't hold two diametrically opposed opinions at the same time. it creates something called infinity. And this is one of the problems with Islam, because they have a concept of duality that basically teaches to do this, and this is extremely problematic. Let's think of this next part. Caprice often wins out over the intellect. Really? Considering something good or bad comes to be based on mere whim. So it cannot be said that an act which the mind deems good is therefore good in the eyes of Allah. Its performance called for and its doer rewarded by Allah, or that whatever the mind feels it to be bad is thus bad in the eyes of Allah. Its non-performance called for and its doer punished by Allah. Here we enter the Twilight Zone. Allah's Sharia has now declared that Allah is incapable of communicating to his creation naturally. He's unable to communicate even the concept of morality. Nothing can be known without Allah and his prophet. So yes, throughout your brain, they have said it. Intellect, throw it out. Now you can accept Islam. So if you're using your brain, you won't accept Islam? Is that what we're hearing here? Again, I didn't write this. It's got to make you think. All right. Go on. Nothing can be known without Allah and his prophet. This is greatly problematic due to the fact that the prophet, a.k.a. Muhammad, committed many acts today which would be considered crimes. Some of those actions are so horrible that they would receive charges of war crimes, genocide, violations of human rights, crimes against children, slavery, the selling of slaves, pedophilia, and this is the these were all acts that were approved of by Allah. The betting of one's son, wife. We would find these to be highly offensive today. Even in his culture, they found some of his actions extremely, extremely offensive. But throw out your brain and accept. Again, it says it here. Intellect. The priest often wins out over intellect, but again, they're saying that you can't know, even using your brain. Again, I didn't say it. This was said. Thank you, Sharia. I have to sit there and laugh at this stuff. And I went too fast. All right. And I got to go back. All right, sorry. So let's think about this. Again, the human mind's incapable of knowing good or evil apart from Allah's messenger. Larry is right. The brain gets washed to the point where it can't be used. Allah doesn't come to earth to communicate. Again, it's Allah doesn't come to earth to communicate. Allah doesn't talk to his people, if we are his people. Even the Muslims get nothing from Allah. They might get a messenger. But wait a minute. If there are no more messengers, can there be any communication? Well, not unless they pick up a book called the Quran. See, it doesn't talk about preaching. It says a messenger, it says a prophet, but that means there's no salvation, if they have a concept of it. There's no spreading of Islam. There's no growth of Islam apart from their scriptures. Again, I'm using their words, not ours. This is scary stuff. Oh, we lost Rad again. Bummer. All right. Hey, Larry, you want to read this next part? Or I think you were out. Go ahead. So you can't even, again, this is where intellect gets thrown out, your brain gets thrown out. So now you have to accept, well, let's go back to the beginning of this, though. School of thought, good acts are morally responsible, is what the lawgiver. Now, this part makes me laugh. The lawgiver. Let's talk about who the lawgiver is. Wait a minute. The lawgiver. Oh, sorry. We're on A1.4. That's why I'm in the wrong spot here. All right. Okay. And we're going to go one more spot here. All right. Oops, sorry. The lawgiver. Here we go. Okay. Not reason. Okay. There's another part here, and I didn't put it up. Here's the rest of this. It says, according to this school, a person is not morally obligated by Allah to do or I don't think I have it on the next slide. Let me see. No, I don't. Okay. According to this school, a person is not morally obligated by Allah to do or refrain from anything unless the invitation of a prophet. Man, the prophet's dead. Okay. Not obligated unless the invitation of a prophet and what Allah has legislated has reached him. Wait a minute. We're not talking about the Quran. We're talking about Sharia is the evangelistic tool. We're not talking about the Hadith. We're not talking about people. It's Sharia. Unless the invitation of a prophet and what Allah has legislated has reached him. And then it says CW4 discussing Islam's relation to previous prophet laws. No one is rewarded for doing something or punished for refraining from or doing something until he knows by means of Allah's messengers, which means he'd have to, the only way Allah communicated, Muhammad communicated was through the Quran and supposedly through Hadith, again, supposedly for both of those. And if you don't read those, but again, the contradiction here is that it comes, you're only going to learn this through the Sharia, which should compel you to read these things. Which is, I forgot to add that slide. I apologize. Okay. Until he knows of Allah's messenger is obliged to refrain from. So whoever lives in such complete isolation and what the summons of a prophet in the sacred law does not reach him is not morally responsible to Allah for anything and deserves neither reward nor punishment. And those who lived in one of those of the intervals after the death of the prophet and before the new one, before a new one. Are you catching this? I'm going to read this one more time. You know what? I want you to think about this. It says, and those who lived in one of the intervals after the death of a prophet and before a new one had been sent were not responsible for anything and deserved neither reward nor punishment. And Quran, and they cite Quran 17:15. We do not punish until we send a messenger. So my question, if there's no messenger, can anybody today be punished? If there's no present day messenger, go out, enjoy, go find out for yourself. Is there a present day messenger? The Quran, Quran speaks of a seal of the prophets, which means a seal is a stamp of approval. It's not the end. Islam will tell you it means the end. But if you go back to the time period that this book was written, a seal was something. You poured wax on a letter that you're writing, and it was to seal the letter, to secure it together. It was usually done in a type of scroll fashion. You would send a letter, and that seal would have you would take a ring that you would be wearing, and you would stamp that seal. They would know by looking at that stamp, that seal, that it was from you. So it's a stamp of approval. That's the historical record, and one of Eric's favorite words, historicity, of what a stamp stamp is. So you got me to say it. All right. Oh, boy. According to this. Well, you know what's really strange is what he did would have been deemed acceptable under Islam. So would Hitler have been rewarded in the end is another question, because if you read through Sharia, you would actually find out he might get rewarded. But the sad truth is, after you read the Quran and you read the Hadith and you read the Sirahs, all those who follow Islam go to hell. Now, whether they come out of it in their belief structure, because they all do, according to the Quran, they all go to hell. The question is, would they be brought out? And that is the other question there. I'm not a straight-minded thing. This is the stuff you sit here and go, wait a minute. I mean, you have to stop and ask questions. And this is what I like about looking at some of this. So here's what I wrote. If we just take this part of Sharia, we now have permission to commit any kind, and this is exactly what Larry's saying. If we just take this part of Sharia, we now have permission to commit any kind of vanity or sin just simply because we can be labeled ignorant. There is another problem with this only for the Muslim, that Allah's messenger, Muhammad, is not the last prophet. Now, please note, on the screen, you will see in the bottom, it says DISW3. We're going to go there in a minute. All right? Don't go to W3, which is the notes section for Sharia. You don't hear that they believe Muhammad is the last prophet. When you're reading this, you think there's going to be more prophets, that there has to be more messengers. So again, look at this. It says the lawgiver. I mean, my biggest problem here is this. Again, I want to go back for just a second before I get into the notes. My biggest problem with this whole thing is where it defines who the lawgiver is. Pay real close attention. I did not write this. This is written by Muslims writing Sharia. Parentheses, synonym, Allah or his messenger. Not and. So this messenger who they're proclaiming is Muhammad is partners with Allah, has equal authority with Allah. That's what this says. I thought the biggest crime in Islam was shirk, to make partners with Allah. Is this not a statement of shirk? That Allah has a partner. It's this guy called his messenger. His messenger is declared to be, some people call him Mo, some people call him Abdul, but in general, he is called Muhammad. Says something. Now, one would expect that if Muhammad was to be the last prophet, that they would have said something about that. The question remains, why is it not said? What was the reason for leaving it out? There is a note here to go to there's a note in 1.5 to go to W4.0, but I'm going to go to this section, W3. I think I have that on my next slide. W3. Now, I find this part really interesting, and I'll tell you why. It's who they're citing here, Ghazali. Ghazali's a Sufi. He writes, the way that the medicines of acts of worship work, their limits and amounts of being specified and determined by the prophets cannot be comprehended by the apparatus of intellectuals' intelligence. So your worship doesn't require intelligence. So you don't have to use your brain at all? Is Allah asking for brain-dead people to... Again, this is where you'll hear sometimes on video, imams saying, throw your brain out. It's not me saying this. You can go and find them. There are videos out there. Take your brain out. Now you can accept Islam. And it's not just us saying it. I believe Yasser Qadri's been caught saying that. There's a whole bunch of people who are saying, in fact, if you go to Eric Brazeau's YouTube, you can find a video where Yasser Qadri has said something similar. And I was going to play that and I forgot to save it, so forgive me. I will get back to that. All right, let's get back into this. It says, rather, it is necessary to follow the example of the prophets. How do you do that? You can't use the Quran for that. You have to have the Hadith and the Sirah. So now it is a requirement, but they're not telling you that. This is where it gets interesting. They did not say you have to read the Quran and the Sirah. They didn't say you have to read the Hadith and the Sirah. They say it is necessary to follow the example of the prophets, plural, to whom these properties are perceived through prophetic light, not the apparatus of the mind. So really, you can't know how to behave unless you imitate these guys. That, to me, is the biggest problem. You are 100% right, Darcy. You are 100% right. Eric, you're here, I'm going to ask you, what is the thing as educators we want kids to do? When we're teaching a class, what is the one thing we want them to do so they can learn? Oops. Guess maybe he's busy. Anybody, Darcy's already said it pretty much. What is the one thing people have to do to learn? Oh, no. Before that. Question. That's exactly it, Darcy. That is the answer. If you don't have questions, you won't read. If you don't have questions, you won't ask somebody to learn something. You won't do any research. And this is the number one problem. Now we can go on a little bit. Well said, Darcy. Well said, Larry. Thank you. If a philosopher denies the possibility of such properties in the numbers of the rakas. Now, again, we haven't even been told what a raka is. Of the prayer. These are the motions they go through. Stoning the pillars at Mina. Again, we haven't been told anything about this. This is the beginning of Sharia. The number of Hajj integrals, or the acts of worship and I'm just going to leave it there. I want to stop there because this is just, to me, this is just kind of mind-numbing. Now, I'm going to pull back. I'm going to speak more about Ghazali later if I don't get to it today. I will tell you, the new book I am reading, and let's see if we can get it closer. I think I'd have to turn off. Al-Ghazali's Kitab al-Ilim. The Book of Knowledge, which I think is humorous, contradicts what I'm reading right now. It talks about the importance of gaining wisdom, the importance of gaining knowledge. But what we've just heard is throw out everything you know. Throughout your intellect. So that's why I find it really interesting that they went to a Sufi. But Sufis are the ones, and this is the part that's should shock everybody. Sufis are the ones that are really responsible for Sharia. go back a little bit more here. All right. A4.3. And I think this is my mistake. So excuse me. This is where I probably went. Yeah, I didn't get enough in here. So hold on a minute. I put too many things together. So let me just go back and I apologize. I put too many things together trying to do this the last. I didn't put it together in the right way, but for my presentation. So let me go right here and we'll come back out. All right. Let's look at W4.0 and I'll have to put it up and I could pull it up later. All right. W4.0, it says the finality of the prophet's message. W4.1 says, and these are comments by Sheikh Noon al-Salaman. This section has been translated to clarify some possible confusion among Muslims as to the Islam's place among world religions. The discussion centers on 3 points. Muhammad is the last prophet and messenger. Wait a minute. Let me take this back. I'm going to go back here and point this one more time out. Let's go back and I think it was here. If Muhammad is the last prophet, who's going to help us to know what's right and wrong? Because it says here, you need a messenger. There it is. The good acts of the morally responsible is what the lawgiver has indicated permitting. And again, the good is, according to the school of thought, it's the sacred law, school of thought. And who's going to tell us what's right and wrong? Does it ever say that in the Quran? It does not. It just says he's a seal, which is a statement of approval, which is what a messenger is, according to the Quran. A messenger just approves the words of the prophet. Previously revealed religions are valid in their own eras, as is attested to by many verses of the Holy Quran, but were abrogated by the universal messages of Islam, as it is usually attested to by many verses of the Quran. Both points are worthy of attention from English-speaking Muslims who are occasionally exposed to erroneous theories advanced by some teachers and Quran translators affirming these religions' validity, but denying or not mentioning their abrogation, or that it is unbelief kufar to hold that the remnant cults now bearing the names of formerly valid religions such as Christianity or Judaism are acceptable to Allah Most High after he has sent the final messenger to the entire world. This is a discussion, this is a matter over which there is no disagreement among Islamic scholars, and if English-speaking Muslims at times discuss it as if there were some question about it. The only reason can be that no one has yet offered them a translator of a scholarly Quranic exegesis, tafsir, to explain that the accord between the various Quranic verses and their agreement with the Sunnah. A few passages translated below will helpfully be used until this has been done. So let me just give you a few of these. Islam is the final religion that Allah Most High will never lessen or abrogate. Again, they claim that Christianity has been abrogated. Really? If it's abrogated, then why does Allah not say there's anything wrong with the Gospels? If he's saying something's wrong with the Gospels, then he can't protect his word. His word is meaningless. Again, this is where Allah's concept of abrogation means he can't preserve his word. His word is not the same today, tomorrow. He changes his word. So Allah is not the same today, in the past, today, and tomorrow. So this guy changes his stripes as often as people change underwear. Isn't that what they're saying too? This is problematic. This is extremely problematic. And this is their concept of God. He changes. This is just the beginning of me getting into this. And I'll put a better presentation together for next week. I think it's important that we look at this concept of throwing out your brain. Is it a requirement to follow Allah? That's what Sharia is telling us. That's what we read right on the screen from Reliance the Traveler. I am amazed. The part that really got me looking at this over and over again was a discussion that Dr. Lloyd DeJong had said, which was about you do not need to have knowledge. And as I'm going through this, we're just starting here. You don't have to have knowledge about, if you don't have knowledge about who Allah is, you're actually safer. Because now you can do all the wrong you want. You can't get punished for it. Makes you think. So now, let's ask that question. If we follow his way of thinking, what would you say to someone who says they could accept this, that they would disagree with a statement, all right? It is always wrong to punish babies just for fun. If they disagreed with that statement, person would they be? If God can communicate something is wrong, something is abhorrent about punishing babies for fun, to your heart, to your soul, does that say Allah is too small? Because Allah can't do it. It's what the Sharia says. This is where I sit there and I have to think, what is messed up here? I mean, it's scary. I'm just kind of mind numb when I start to think about it. Now, I did want to get into a different topic, which I haven't been doing the news, and I do apologize for having not done that for 8 weeks. And I do have some people upset with me for talking about Catholicism, and I get that. And I told people I had no choice. I firmly believe I had to discuss that and get that out. So I am not apologizing, but I do have other concerns that I do want to share, other news stories I think we need to talk about. So let's get into the big news story I think today should have us all concerned. And I'm just going to put it in the chat room. Here we go. The big news story I think we should all be concerned about. It comes, I took this off of Yahoo News. You can get it from a few other places. And this is, did I put the wrong one in there? Yeah, I did put the wrong one in there. Sorry, I think I did. All right. And yeah, that's the right one, man. Okay. So this story to me is one of the hot topics. I think Eric heard it discussed the other night. A man from Idaho scoped out Nevada's power generating site. And I think Eric and I don't know how many of us were discussing it the other night. This guy, this Muslim, went and he rammed his car through a gate at a solar plant outside Las Vegas and set his car on fire, disabling the huge facility. Now, this is, I'm just going to read the article, and you tell me what sounds strange about it, because I know what I think sounds strange. It says, around 11:30 Wednesday, this is last week we're talking about, Las Vegas Metro Police responded to a solar plant on U.S. 93 north of Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Sources told the 8 News Now investigators. Employees at the plant said they found a car smoldering in a generator pit. The Mega Solar Array facility provides energy to MGM properties, but it is run by a company called Invenergy. The driver, later identified as Mohammed Mesmarian, is accused of ramming through a fence and setting the car on fire. The car is registered out of Idaho, documents said. Police said suspect, Ms. Marion, drove through the fence Tuesday afternoon after employees had left for the day. It was not until 12 a.m. Wednesday, that's midnight, when video reports show, video cameras show Ms. Marion setting the car on fire. Ms. Marion reportedly watched the car burn, sitting in a chair for about 15 minutes before walking off. Anybody have questions? Because to me, this is not enough. Let me read just the rest of this article. Investigators also believe Ms. Marion siphoned gasoline from his car to put on the wires at the transformer. Investigators found an iPhone in the burnt car with an account connected to Ms. Marion. Really? They also found two laptops. Police located Ms. Marion at a campground Thursday, a day after the fire in Boulder Beach at Lake Mead. It's unclear how he got there from the solar site to Boulder, Colorado, to Boulder City, a 30-mile drive. Ms. Marion clarified he burned the Toyota Camry a couple days ago. Ms. Marion, wait, did you hear that? He burned it? Ms. Marion stated he burned the vehicle at a Tesla solar plant and did it for the future. Metro Police said a person from Republic Services, which was near the solar plant, called police early on Wednesday about a person who was trespassing. Police noted numerous recent attacks on power infrastructure in recent months. Ms. Marion faces charges of committing an act of terrorism, arson, destroying or injuring real or personal property of another, and escape by a felony prisoner. Notice they're not mentioning the person's name who escaped. An employee at the plant said the fire caused major damage, estimating it would take 2 years to receive replacement parts. The damaged unit remained shut down due to the fire, and the plant was not producing electricity. Following an incident at the Mega Solar Array facility on site, personnel immediately notified authorities and shut down the plant's operations as a precaution in accordance with industry standard protocols. So, anybody have questions or thoughts on this? If you want to speak up, go ahead. You got the floor. My personal thoughts are, first of all, I was asked, do I think this is part of a coordinated attack on solar, on power plants? And my first thought was no. There's a lot of questions here. This guy burned up two laptops in the process, or he attempted to. I think he's got some serious problems, because the stuff I've seen with federal investigators, what they can get out of a burned laptop, I don't think he got rid of the majority of what he wanted to get rid of. The fact that he sat there and watched this for 15 minutes, the fact that he stayed, I think it was an indication he was trying to kill himself. He thought the whole plant would blow up. Was he trying to commit an act of jihad? In my mind, absolutely. Was he doing this for the purpose of getting forgiveness of sins, which jihad is supposed to guarantee? It's your straight ticket to your 72 virgins. I mean, that's another question that probably needs to be looked into. What did he recently commit some horrible sin that he needed forgiveness for? And the only way, according to Sharia, for him to get that was to kill himself in an act of jihad. Something to think about. I think you're right. I don't, the issue, well, actually, jihadis tend to brag. And this is the thing I think is interesting. So I've had people point out two special things here. Jihadis tend to brag a lot about what they do. Here's when they stop bragging. When it's part of a plan and the plan isn't finished, They'll brag about their own park. So he said he did it for the future. And that's what has a lot of people asking questions. I think it was Eric asked questions about that. I know John asked questions about it. We have to think, you know, what did he mean for the future? My biggest thing about all these power plant attacks, is that I believe it is node testing. They're checking to see how much is affected by this particular or that particular power plant. Hey, Sharon. Welcome. We're talking about the power plant that went down. I don't know if you've heard us talking about it, but please, I know that you've had some thoughts on this. This is the one in Vegas that went down, attacked by what I would call a jihadi. Do you have any thoughts on that? Yes. Sharon, do you have any thoughts on that jihadi attack on the power plant in Vegas area? Yeah, did you hear about that? No. All right, there's a link in the chat room there. I guess I'd have to put in the private for you to be able to use it, so I'll do that. All right. Now, I'm looking at this, and I'm still thinking it's a single jihadi. I have my own thoughts for that, and I can't exactly explain them all. Just little things. I think he was trying to kill himself. I think he was trying to sacrifice himself. I'm not sure. I don't have any true – I don't have anything reliable to go either way with that, which is part of what bothers me most probably about it. I think there's a possibility there is more to come if he's talking about the future, but I don't know that he's part of a coordinated team. Do I think there are more? Here's the thing. Al-Qaeda has been encouraging attacks like this for a long time. So has ISIS. So usually, you know, the funny thing is when they talk about fire and starting fires, they usually will say things like, don't set yourself on fire. I mean, you don't want to die and not had, you know, by a fire and not had a huge amount of effect. They'll laugh at you type thing. The ISIS manuals are on setting fires are usually like, don't get yourself caught in the fire. You know, stuff like that, you sit there and wonder. But this case, this guy wanted to go up in flames is my – I don't see any other reason why he would have sat there and watched it. I don't think he sat at a high enough distance if a power plant was to blow up. And that's why I think it was a singular piece. I do think he went there for the purpose of death. How he got from there to 30 miles away? Well, an average person walks 3 miles an hour. Could he get there in a couple days? Probably. Did he have the ability to call Uber? That's another question because, there was a phone that was burned up. Did he have access to another phone? Likely. They didn't say he called Uber. They didn't say it didn't happen. They didn't say he didn't call a friend. They're not even talking about another phone. There are a lot of questions that need to be answered, and I think this is too superficial. That's the biggest thing I see. Yes. Oh, it says that he is, basically, so. His name pretty much reveals that. That's what I'm getting at. Yes. That's what I was thinking as well. So, you're asking good questions, and That's the other thing that bothers me the most about this. Those aren't even thought of to be answered. And I believe there's one of the two attacks. The New York City jihadi was actually there illegally, I believe. That was the new information that came out this week. So that's another thing. We'll see if we have time to get into that. Here's the other power outage that happened today. And I don't know if anybody heard about the power outage today. And I still believe firmly this is node testing. I'm just put the link in the chat room. And I'll put it in our private chat so people here can also look at it. This is an article that has me looking also. I got this off Yahoo News. Power outage. Long lines at Terminal A opening ad to Flyer ire after prior delays. It's by Colleen Wilson. It was in the NorthJersey.com. Carlos Paredes got to Newark Liberty International Airport's new Terminal A at 2 a.m. Thursday for a 5 a.m. flight to fly to Guatemala to visit family he has not seen in 8 years. When he got there, the departures area was packed. The lines were already long, and it was becoming more chaotic by the minute. American Airlines had two people checking bags. The Hackettstown resident said, and after waiting a while in line, he and the others were told the computers were slow. A guy came and pulled a couple of wires from under the desk, trying to make it work. Paredes said, they moved us from this line, and they say, no, it's no good. You have to go to another line. So they moved us 4 times. He never managed to check his bag, and he was one of 19 people who missed their flights while standing in line. I'm not complaining, but the rest of the people were really pissed off at Paredes, who was able to get another flight to Guatemala at 3 p.m. That meant he would be spending 12 hours in the brand-new $2.7 billion terminal, whose opening was riddled with issues, including a two-hour early morning power outage at the airport. Paredes was afraid to go home for fear of getting a flat tire or something else unexpected that would cause him to miss his rescheduled flight, and was even afraid of getting something to eat, reassigned to sit in the seat closest to the United Airlines check-in line until the time for his flight neared. Some 32,000 people were expected to pass through the terminal on its christening day. Now, 32,000 people. Again, this is another power outage in an area maintained by Port Authority officials. I consider a lot of this node testing. How big an area will this affect? Is the purpose of this, of these places going out, is it to find out which is the most powerful place to hit? This is where I have some concerns. Think about this. I mean, how many flights got rescheduled? How many flights got canceled? When 9/11, when planes got grounded, let's make it that simple. We're talking about massively all across the United States. A lot of business came to a screeching halt. People stopped. They felt we were at war. What would happen if that happened? Not due to a physical attack, but due to people. Hey, welcome. What would happen if that attack happened as a result of power outages? And this is where people have to start thinking. If they're doing node testing, what is their goal? Is it to take down the Eastern Seaboard? We've seen that happen once before. Where are they going with this? And this is something to be to think about. The other article that's out there today that I really wanted to get into, and let me just see if I can get that article up. and I don't think I'm going to get into it. I had an article on about Turkey and Sweden. I just got to find it real quick. Turkey is having a problem with investigating Swedes, Swedish journalists. Why are they doing that? Now, I found an article today. let's see, here we go. That's not it. And I just had it on my, just pull it out of my email just a minute. I just could not believe this today. I mean, I'm pretty sure I still have access to it. And I delete too much. Here we go. Okay. We'll start here with this one. And this is an article by the Muslim Brotherhood's mouthpiece, Al Jazeera. We'll start here, and then I'll go into what I'm talking about. Austria drops bogus terrorism charges against Muslim academic. Now, this is, to me, is extremely dangerous. And actually, I have calls out to people that I do know who still work in intelligence. Eric, I'm going to ask one of our friends that was on that call the other night if he has any additional information. Here's the problem with this article. First of all, it's by the Muslim Brotherhood's mouthpiece, which is Al Jazeera, which is centered in Qatar. This came out yesterday. It says terrorism charges against an Austrian academic, Farid Hafez, have been dropped after an Al Jazeera documentary revealed the case was based on false evidence and fabricated accusations. Number one, that piece right there is entirely fabricated. And it gets revealed, but not in how they think. It says, in an interview with Al Jazeera, Hafiz said he was relieved to be no longer living in limbo more than 2 years after officers barged into his two-story home and pointed their guns at him, his wife, and two children. I never knew if the judges would go ahead and really file charges, which I did not believe they would do at any time. But I could also not believe that such a raid would happen. Hafiz is best known for an annual report on European Islamophobia and is one of the founders of the Austrian Muslim Youth Association. Oh, okay. So he's telling us he's a leader of a Muslim Brotherhood organization. People need to understand that. That's what he's saying here. Looking back to political scientists. Oh, that's surprising. Muslim Brotherhood, keep thinking. Hafiz's apartment was one of 60 homes of Muslim activists and academics raided in November of 2020 and part of Operation Luxor. That should send signals out to anybody who's been watching stuff. Search warrant alleged that Hafez, who was of Egyptian origin, again, another reason why we know he's Muslim Brotherhood, that they wanted to go in, wanted to destroy Egypt and Israel and establish a worldwide Islamic caliphate with Jerusalem at its capital.
Really?
In addition to supporting terrorism, police accused him of crimes, including hostility to the state and money laundering. With Muslim Brotherhood connections, highly possible. Fisa's bank account was frozen, leaving him unable to pay lawyers or repair the damage caused during the raid. Now, here's the real reason he's not being charged. You ready? The academic, who has since relocated to the United States to become a professor at Georgetown University, is relocated to the United States, so he's no longer Austria's problem. He's our problem. We did the Sharia earlier. I just finished that duel, so I apologize. We just finished that topic, and I'm just about done for the night. I just wanted to discuss some important things. what happened with this message, I think this is an actually important article that you have to, we have to recognize that the United States is allowing, is avoiding national security concerns. This man was arrested on possible terrorism charges, and yet he was still allowed to come to Georgetown University to be a professor. Well, you know, and where he's serving is a well-known connected Muslim Brotherhood hub within the United States. This is extremely scary. So problematic. And I think people need to pay attention to what happened. You can always join. Let me throw up. I do not, we're about to finish on the news, so I'll throw it up. You're welcome to join us, but we're not going more into Sharia tonight. My biggest concern here is this guy is now at Georgetown University. Georgetown University has serious connections to our government. Georgetown University has been one of the leading universities in this country. They have a huge impact on what is taught in universities across the country. They have a huge impact on what is taught to children across the country in high schools. Yes. These are huge concerns. Yes. See, Berkeley and a few other UCs has been giving platforms to convicted terrorists. Cinnamon Stillwell has been one of those highly documenting these actions with the Middle East Forum. I love Cinnamon Stillwell's work. She's actually one of my first interviewees. And I wrote this book. Oh my gosh, forgive me. This is the joy of having a green background and trying to show you a book with green. Civilization, Jihad, and the Myth of Modern Islam, you can obtain in an ebook form. I have not put it up for sale in a paperback form unless you buy directly from me, unfortunately, because I only have about 50 left. I'm going to put that into an updated version someday in the future. But this stuff, this book covers a lot of the university influence. And this was written during Obama's reign of allowing, and we can credit Hillary amongst that as well. So, yes. All this stuff is there. All these elements are there. The influences that are done by the professors, they're all there. My biggest concerns with that is each individual country, no matter where you're from, if you're allowing terrorists, people who are convicted terrorists, people who have been arrested for terrorism, people who have known connections to terrorism to come into your country, I don't care what job they take. It's stupid. It's wrong. At the very least, somebody should be standing at the door when they come to your country and saying, sorry, you got to go home. Go back where you came from. Yes, they do. Yeah, I'm familiar with them. Zaytuna. They have an Islamic college, and where is that? Is that Berkeley? Go ahead. So I'm just going to read you a piece from my book, Civilization, Jihad, and the Myth of Modern Islam. MSA Hate Speech Guest Speakers. In New York State, state university system, which is called SUNY here, and we call it SUNY in New York State. SUNY New Paltz even paid to send students to an event at New York University to listen to a well-known jihadist speaker, Siraj Wahaj. Now, this was written before Suraj Wahaj became big news because of something his son did, which was have a jihadi training camp. Oh, he was even listed on the flyer the SUNY students submitted for approval of funding for the trip. The event was titled Building Momentum in Mainstream Culture. Now that you have a grasp of Sharia regarding jihad, this was the very name of the event should be caused to watch, be watched by the FBI, because we know their goal is not to blend in with mainstream culture, but to change the constitution on which it's based. So think about that. The MSA officers at the SUNY New Paltz did not even try to hide Suraj Wahaj as a speaker in the event. It's possible they were unaware of who he is, or they considered the student association members who were responsible for approving funding to be clueless that Wahaj was known for giving speeches that promote jihad when they included the list below in their petition for funding. Discover the networks discovered one of the most interesting things about Suraj Wahaj. He claimed to have complete training on Islamic as an Islamic cleric at al-Qura University in Mecca, Saudi Arabia, in 78, according to the research. It says this, al-Qura University in Mecca, Saudi was not, Arabia was not established until 1981. Prior to that term, it was known as the Colleges of Sharia and Education and was a branch of Jeddah-based King Abdul Aziz University, which was renowned as a hub for young radical terrorists. Know who else went there? Osama bin Laden, Sheikh Abdullah Azzam, Wael Jalaiden, co-founders of Al-Qaeda. Oh, Suraj Wahaj is putting himself. See, yeah. What would happen if he said he went to school with Osama bin Laden? Would he be an accepted speaker for the Muslim Students Association? Think about it. I pick up the e-book on this one, Civilization, Jihad, and the Myth of Modern Islam. You can pick it up at Smashwords or at Amazon. Anybody else want to contribute for a few seconds? And then I'm going to close the show. Watch for next week. And let me just see here. If somebody else, I apologize, I didn't see. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for the opportunity. Jihad we've been talking about, the jihad we're talking about right now is the civilization jihad, which is happening on college campuses, which is you move in, you quietly do things locally here. That's what got me active. For those who don't know my story, I was part of a local Patriots group, and I think the biggest danger is they took what they did in Egypt through how the Muslim Brotherhood really expanded was what they did in the colleges, and they were able to repeat it in many Arabic countries, and Islamic countries. And because they did that, they started to infiltrate what I would consider Western civilization through the colleges first. In the United States, the Muslim Brotherhood members went to Canada first. They came over through the Canadian border because it was easier to become Canadian citizens, and then they came here. Because many of those countries were not allowed to come, people from those countries were not allowed to come here to the United States. The Muslim Brotherhood leaders that we know that started the Muslim Student Association here in the United States, that's what they did. They became Canadian citizens because they couldn't let people know what country they came from. Because if they came here without coming to Canada first, they would not have been allowed in, period. And one of those, Ismail Faruqi, who is the doctoral advisor of Dr. Muhammad Shafiq, who was at Nazareth College, and this is the reason why I got involved, when he tried to bring in a group called the International, International Institute of Islamic Thought, and brought them into Nazareth College, gave them $500,000, and this is what they're doing. I think they've already changed what we teach, because when I was a child, they went through and we were taught that Islam spread by the sword. Now, I graduated from high school in 82. Today, students are taught, it's required, by the way, in New York State, it was required to be taught that Islam spread through cultural diffusion. They never tell a child that. Yes. That was what they learned in Egypt. And this is in Saudis. I think it'll be interesting. I think Sharia is the destruction of Islam. The more I read it, we're gonna keep going through it. This is the first of many sessions we're gonna go through. I'll invite you next. I'll send you an invite next time so you can join us from the beginning. I apologize I didn't do that. I think what's going to happen is I think Usama's big message: my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Yeah, we have to be, and Sharon and Larry and Eric and Darcy, we all talk about this in many different ways, and I think we have to do everything we can to get out and share. Now, what everybody, once you've heard today here, it's not good enough to just listen. Take it out there, share it. I don't care if you just share the video. I'm not asking you to do that. The goal here is to get the information out. Be daring. Share this video on a LinkedIn professional site. Why? Because you have professional educators out there. Share this video on as a Christian apologetics. That's allowed on LinkedIn. Okay? I've done that. Why do we do this? Well, you get people to at least click on the button and listen and to learn what Sharia actually teaches. You scare people because they start to learn what Islam teaches versus what we teach. I mean, it's more important you see what they teach. I can tell you what I think about it, but it's more important you see what they believe rather than what you are told what they believe. And that, to me, is... In our... In the United States, if that's all you're able to do for kids, you're not considered a professional educator. And that's, I mean, for those of us who, Eric can testify to that, I can testify to that, the joy of having retired. Yeah. Yeah. I think when we get to that section, it's going to be really interesting, but our biggest discussion today is that Allah is not big enough. Let me pull that screen back up. Allah is too small, is what it comes down to. He's not a big God. He can't communicate to his people according to Sharia. He can't even consider he can't even tell us what's right and wrong by communicating directly with us. Yeah. And well, that's part of what we were talking about. So there's a part here. Where was it? Okay. It was here. Yeah. Yeah, throw out your brain. A1.3 tells us to throw out your brain. But here's the problem with this. They just said, if we reach by a prophet's invitation to know things. Okay, so we don't know that – when you read this, you don't know that Muhammad is supposed to be considered a last prophet. Okay, so if there's no – if you're not reached by a prophet's invitation, okay, we got problems. And I think a lot of this has to do with the dangers of, you know, if you don't know these things, if Allah can't communicate to you without using a person, without using, if he can't communicate directly to all human beings with the concept of morality, he's not a big enough God. And this says you can, and his concept, and this is what we were getting at, his concept of morality is basically Nietzsche's Übermensch, which is the in English, that's Superman. And that is extremely problematic. If his concept is Übermensch, it means his morality is different and opposed to everybody else's morality. And this is scary stuff, but I look at this as Allah is too small of a God to be worshipped. And I will say Muhammad, you know, Muhammad, if he's using Muhammad and he's calling him a prophet, this is a guy who decided to commit many crimes. Among them are genocide, theft, stealing, killing, murdering. And these are things that Muhammad did that are recorded in the Sirahs. They are recorded in the Hadiths. Even the Quran discusses some of these. Aisha, his child bride, talks about these things. She said she was 6 when he married her, and he thighed her until she was 9 and then bedded her. These are crimes today. We would arrest him for pedophilia. We would put him in jail, and he'd probably spend a lifetime there for the amount of crimes. The one thing you would think that would upset all Muslim men, this man had no problem with stealing his son's wife, his adopted son. This is why there's really no adoption. And if it was a foster, well, it's foster son or adopted son, however you want to put it. You don't see this in Islam. Why? Because this is their perfect man. He steals and then he enslaves. There's so much. Their prophet is not a prophet according to the Torah, yet he wants that background. And he can't get it because he doesn't meet the bare minimum qualifications of being from the Jewish people. And that's what we saw. Pull that one back up. That to me was just hilarious. Where is it? Right here. A1.4. And it's in Sharia. The basic premise of the school thought is that the good of the acts are those morally responsible is what the lawgiver. And they say this is synonymous with Allah or his messenger. You can't have Allah apart from his messenger. His messenger has the same qualities. Oh, wait a minute. That would mean this messenger that he's talking, they're calling his messenger, has the same authority as Allah? Really, there is no prophet in the Old Testament. Not one would say they have the same authority as God. Not one. Could they say they are God's voice piece? Absolutely. But could they dare to say they are the authority of God? No. There's no messenger, which we would call the word messenger in the Old Testament is angelos. It's an angel. This is one of the things Muhammad didn't know. When he used the word messenger, Muhammad isn't bright enough to know that messengers in the Old Testament were angels. Messengers in the New Testament are angels. Oh, again, he wasn't bright enough to know those things. It's kind of sad to when you think about it. These were God's messengers. Allah's messengers are, it's only one guy. He gives one whole story, and it's so bad, it can't even compare. It can't even stand up against itself in the Quran. Just hilarious. So I suggest everybody to join if you have yet to see it, we've been going, Usama is going through the story of Moses in the Quran. To me, it's humorous and it's sad at the same time. Lynn, can you tell other people about the other shows that are on the network that you're doing too? Eric here is one of the, who's one who studied under Jay Smith and a few others, and he has done an excellent, he's shared some excellent material on whether Mecca it was a real place and many other good things. So I also, you know, recommend to everybody who's listening, you want to catch the Cross and the Crescent discussion group. His show is, I've been enjoying it for more than a few years now. Together, we've been working. We started out, I'd say the two of us started out at Blog Talk Radio, and he got into doing video broadcasting before I did. Kind of convinced me that I got to try it. So I've been enjoying this. That's what it comes down to. And if you're listening and you feel like you need to leave, you're ready to leave Islam, my suggestion is do it. My suggestion is then get down and take a chance on the Lord Jesus. Ask him to, I mean, if you put these, you put Allah up against Jesus, you're going to see Jesus is so much bigger. And this is the God of love, the God who loves your soul, the God who loves you more than anything else or anyone else will ever love you. Find him. Give your life to Christ. And, you know, I'm not saying your life will be a bed of roses. I'm saying your life will be full. It's not until you give your life to Christ that you realize what the world has for you. You realize what God has for you to do. I'm going to sign off now, and I want to say God bless you all. And thank you for everybody coming and joining. Anybody have last words? Eric, you have anything? He might be busy. And Larry, do you have any last words? Or Sharon, go ahead. And all right. Give yourself a chance to learn who Jesus is. God bless everybody. You want to support my ministry that I'm engaged in, you can find my books on Amazon. You can go to paulsutliff.blogspot.com and you can learn a little bit more. That's Sutliff, S-U-T-L-I-F-F. God bless everybody, and thank you, Lynn, and God bless you. All right, and we are ending. All right, let me just get out of here. Hold on a second, let me turn off the other air. All right.